Teach humbly. Be aware of your own need for God's grace. Teach that from the pulpit. We all need Jesus. Even those whose lives look like they're following the traditional Christian mold. Mom, dad, kid. We all have the same need for a savior. And I would say that single parent families actually are places where you can see God's grace very visibly moving.
Welcome to the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, a show devoted to bridging the gap to the historic Reformed Christian faith. Listen in as two friends, a layman Nick and a pastor Peter, discuss the newest and best books in the broader Christian tradition with some of the most respected seminary and college professors, pastors, theologians, authors, and more. We hope these book club episodes introduce solid theological works to those who want to read but don't know where to start or who to trust. You'll be introduced to authors you know and many others you don't from various theological traditions, but all under the broader tent of our shared creedal tradition. All of these authors and books help us to do the same thing. They remind us of how the finished work of Jesus Christ changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by the Davenant Institute's educational arm, Davenant Hall. Interested in dipping your toes at Davenant Hall this upcoming Trinity term from April 8th to June 15th? Registration closes March 29th. Here's a taste at the courses. 1st and 2nd Corinthians with Joshua Shaw, The Mercy of God in Scripture and Tradition with Ryan Hurd, Male and Female in Modernity with Alistair Roberts, Introduction to Syriac and Arabic Theology with Charles Carman, Philosophy as a Way of Life with Joe Minich, Aristotle Seminar 1, Ethics and Metaphysics with Tim Jacobs, Early Christian Worship, Ritual and Space in the Ancient Church with Matthew Hoskin, Reformation of the Modern World with Michael Lynch, Christian Epic and Old English Literature with Anthony Cirilla, Moral Theology for Counseling with Jim Pachta, Anglican Polity with Nathaniel Keane, and Philosophy of Law with Colin Redemer. GGG listeners who are first-time Davenant Hall students get a $25 discount on auditing any of their Trinity term courses from April 8th to June 15th. Registration closes March 29th with code GGGTrinity24, which is in our show notes. Go to www.davenanthall.com to sign up. Hey, this is Peter Bell, and I am in the beautiful wine country of Central Coast, California, in Santa Maria, north end of Santa Maria, in Santa Barbara County. I serve Redeemer OPC, Redeemer Orthodox Presbyterian Church, on the north end of Santa Maria. We meet at Temple Bethel, which is right there, Temple Bethel, at 11 a.m. for Sunday service and 9:45 a.m., so just before that, for Sunday school. For all ages, we have Kids Sunday School, Adult Sunday School, or all Sunday school at 9:45. You can find us at discoverredeemer.org with one R. Again, discoverredeemer.org. We have a bunch of activities throughout the week, but most importantly, Sunday, we have the gospel preach, the sacraments administered, and church discipline faithfully brought out. So I hope to see you here at Redeemer OPC in Santa Maria, Central Coast, wine country of Santa Barbara. Hope to see you.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Danny Hyde from the Oceanside United Reformed Church. I want to invite you out to our church. We meet in sunny Southern California, here in San Diego, and we meet at the Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad, right along the ocean, as you can see, the Pacific. And we meet every Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning. We hear the Word of God, we hear the Gospel preach, we have the Lord's Supper every Sunday morning, and then we have Sunday school at about noon for kids. We come again together at 5 o'clock every night, Sunday night, for teaching, prayer, and singing. And then we also have various midweek groups, Bible studies, men's, women's, and also other Bible studies as well throughout the week. So I want to invite you out to worship with us. If you know anybody in the area here in North County of San Diego, invite them as well. Let them know. You can find out more about us on our website, oceansideurc.org, or also on all the various social media. You'll find us as well. God bless.
Hey, this is Peter, one of the co-hosts. We're doing something new. All ads will be fronted before the episode for unimpeded listening pleasure. A quick plug for our show, Guilt, Grace, Gratitude. Would you consider giving to our show? We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so your donations are now tax deductible. We've got two options to give. One, email us at guiltgracepod@gmail.com if you'd like to send a check or use our direct donor link. Or two, go to our show notes and click on our donor box link to give a recurring donation or a one-time gift. You can also click on our Patreon account in the show notes and sign up for monthly exclusives, merchandise, coupon codes with publishers we work with, giveaways for our subscribers, and much more. All donations we're gifted are used exclusively to pursue our mission to bridge the gap to reform Christian theology. Would you join us? Now, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, where we bridge the gap to reform Christian theology. And Nick is not here, but as Nick likes to say all the time, it's another day of fresh grace and mercy. We've got our book club episode. This is brought to us by Zondervan, and we've been doing a lot of Zondervan books. They're good friends of ours, and we have another book from Zondervan, God's Grace for Every Family, Biblical Encouragement for Single-Parent Families and the Churches That Seek to Love Them Well. Sort of in the vein, if our listeners remember, last year, around May of last year, we had Danielle Trewick talk about singleness as well as the eschatology of singleness. So something along the lines of what we talked about last year, but more focused towards single families. Here are single parent families here. And we will talk to Anna Mead Harris in just a second, the author of this book. But before we start that, some of our show notes. If you look at our show notes, you'll find some links to our website, guiltgracepod.com, as well as our confessional podcast network that we started about 2 years ago, confessionalpods.com. And also, you'll find a link to this book in our show notes as well. So I encourage you to pick up this book. I also think this is a great book for a church study too. This is not kind of the first go-to for a lot of church studies, but I think it's a really helpful one for church studies. So I would encourage people to pick up multiple copies for themselves and their church and the pastors and friends and all that good stuff. You'll also find in our show notes the Nay Park Church Finders, North American Presbyterian and Reformed Churches. You'll type in your zip code, and when you type in your zip code, it'll dot around your area if there's some churches in your area. So if you have enjoyed our show and you want to find a church that agrees theologically with what we got, then you can find that link in the show notes as well. And then our Bridge Builders. So we have our sponsors, Davenant Institute being our number one sponsor, but you can also find other sponsors on there and some coupon codes for them as well. And if you want to be a donor too, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. So any donations that you give us are tax deductible, and we can help you out with that as well. But again, we got Anna Mead Harris, and I'll give her a brief little bio for who she is. She's been a single mother to three sons since the death of her husband in 2010. She's a senior director of content at Rooted Ministry and co-host of the Rooted Parent podcast. We are co-podcasters. She loves to write and speak about the goodness of God, a graduate of Wake Forest University with a double major in English and history. She also holds a master's degree in English literature, which you'll notice if you read her book that she's got a good grasp of the English language, and she knows how to write really well. She's a member of the Church of the Cross in Birmingham, Alabama. She loves reading, dancing, hiking, chocolate, and the Crimson Tide, who are Nick Saban-less now. And she also loves the outdoors and can't decide which state is prettier, Alabama or Idaho. And I'm going to make the case for California all throughout this episode. But it's a pleasure having you on the show, Ms. Harris.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter. I'm excited to have our conversation.
Of course. And throughout this show, we'll bring in some Alabama Crimson Tide, see how you feel about your new coach. And then also I'm going to make the case for California skiing, beach, and other stuff. I'm gonna make the case for California to be in the three. It's the most expensive state by far, but yes. It's beautiful.
Well, roll tide. We can banter about that all you want. I'll take it on.
I like it. Did you just a quick question? Just because I'm curious. Did you see Nick Saban's little tirade on the NLI stuff?
Was that last week?
Yeah, it was last week sometime. Yeah.
I did not actually watch it because I heard so much about it. I thought
Yeah,
I didn't need to watch it.
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I like how he went off on it, but maybe I'm one of the minority.
no, I appreciate Saban. He really, really cares about the kids he coaches and wants them to be excellent human beings that work hard and give back. And he's a regular, faithful churchgoer. I think he knows and loves Jesus. So all that to say, he has done amazing things for the state of Alabama and
Oh,
amazing things for a number of his players, and more power to him. He's
yeah.
very
So
effective.
are you what are you thinking? Are you looking forward to your new UW coach who's coming in?
Boy, I hope so. I really, I grew up in Alabama, lived in North Carolina for years, and in Colorado. So I got exposed to ACC basketball,
That's right.
learned to love that as
Yeah.
well. So, but football's just in our blood, and things do not go as well if the Crimson Tide is not playing well. And I have been here in times of feast. And in times of famine, and feast is more fun. So
It's fun,
I
yeah.
wish DeBoer all the best. And I do think he too truly cares about his players, really genuinely wants to approach the game and the leadership with excellence. So I have high hopes.
Yeah. So tell our audience and me a little bit more about Anna Harris beyond the Zondervan provided little blurb.
Right. Well, my story that's relevant to our discussion is that I was widowed when my sons were 9, 12, and 13 years old. So that
Oof,
was
yeah.
in 2010. And my husband had cancer. He was sick for about 15 months. And I've been a single mom since. I work for Rooted Ministry, which is a ministry that serves youth pastors and parents. And we have all kinds of resources to help those adults disciple teenagers to lifelong faith in Jesus. And I mean, we've got books, we've got curriculum, we've got a blog, we've got a bunch of podcasts and a conference. And it's just a treat and a joy to work with a bunch of youth pastors. I just can't tell you how much fun that is. And, youth pastors tend to be fun people. So, and then for speaking of fun, I love to run and hike.
Okay. Long or short distance running? What are you doing for running?
Well, mostly short, but one of my sons has gotten into
Oh my
marathons.
gosh.
And
Yeah.
so I will never do that. I'm way too old to pick that up, but I am going to run my second half marathon, the rock and roll half, while he's running the whole in Nashville, which
Okay.
is a super fun event because being Nashville, there's bands about every mile. And so you don't even need your own music because you're running to music the entire time. So
Yeah.
looking forward to that at the end of April.
That's cool. So we've already talked about it. And you said a little bit about your background too. So why write this book? And maybe too, why now versus maybe 10 years ago or when it happened or 5 years, whatever. So why now? Why write this book now?
Well, I wrote this book. Well, the simple answer to now is I didn't know then what I know now. I had so much to learn, and God's track record of faithfulness has just been unbelievable. But, a year after my husband died, I didn't know how God was going to move in our family. And of course, there's still much to be told about our story, much that we don't know. My kids are in their 20s now. The youngest is about to graduate from college, Lord willing. And so that's the straightforward answer. But I wrote the book because I had a church that did care for us very well, really, really well, loved us, met us where we needed, constantly checking in to see what the needs were and how they could meet them. And even in spite of that, church was hard. And we'll, I'm sure, talk about some of those ways that it was hard. But what I began to see as I talked to other single parents was that my experience was unique in how well my church cared for us. And there are a whole lot of single parents who are in churches who really don't know what to do and how to care for those single parents. And also in talking to single parents, I saw clearly what the struggles were. And though our stories can be quite different, our struggles can have some common threads. So I really started with the idea of encouraging single parents. And a friend encouraged me, Colin Hanson of the Gospel Coalition is...
We've had him on a few times, yep.
He lives in my community and we've gotten to be friends. And he suggested that elders and church members and pastors really needed to be privy to the conversation 100%. That I was having with single parents and hear what we needed and how they might love us well. So it kind of evolved. I had the idea for the book in 2016, but I see now that God had a lot to show me and I had a lot to learn. And here it is, 2024, finally here.
Yeah. That's, and for those listening too, this book caught my eye because we have a few single parent families at our church. And then the church that I was at in seminary also had a few single parent families. And it wasn't so much that I knew we messed up with them. It was, like you said, I wasn't sure what they were going through nor exactly how to help. And so it was cool to see this book and see, okay, this is exactly, it's exactly what we're looking for, especially for these. And this is not to say that we're not talking to families or not talking to anybody else, but just like you said, focusing on single parent families, not to the exclusion of, but more particularly so them, which leads me to this next point, because there's so many ways that single parent families become single parented. It's not just the death, like of your husband. There's so many different ways. And so for you and the many that you interviewed, can you describe some of the challenges that you faced that, I'm putting this in square quotes, nuclear families might not experience to the same extent? I'm not saying they don't experience challenges, but not to the same extent. And I hope not opening new wounds, but for those listening, both single parent families and those who are not single parent families, just to get a taste of what it's like.
Right. So I appreciate what you said. There are so many different ways that people become, so many avenues to become a single parent. And one thing to keep in mind as you get to know a single parent and their children is that stories are pretty unique.
Yeah.
And so as you do learn their story, they're almost always painful. And so there is a burden of grief and sadness, sometimes frustration and anger, that single parents often come into this new phase of life of single parenting with. And that's something that's unique. Now, there is an increasing trend, which was profiled a few years ago by Christianity Today, of single parents who are people who have never been married and they adopt. Mm-hmm. That may not be quite as painful a trajectory unless that person really wanted to be married and they have not, you know, found that person. So all that to say, keep in mind that their stories, their backstories are painful. Yeah. And in terms of the burdens that we carry, I think I appreciate what you said about how married parent families carry a lot of the same burdens, but not in the same way. For example, some of the things that increase when you become a single parent, your exhaustion.
I felt that reading the book. I felt exhausted, which is good. I think you need to feel this when you're reading it. Yeah.
To be clear, reading the book is not exhausting, right?
No. But you do a really good job, even though it's an enjoyable read. You do a good job of I don't know how to describe it, but like showing the exhaustion to where you feel it, but it's not for the reader, it's not burdensome, but you're like, man, this is rough what they have to go through.
Well, it's just that you're on call 24 hours a day, yeah. 7 days a week. Yeah. And there is no break. There's never, and that is true when you become a parent, right? You're yeah, never
we're not saying parents aren't the same way, for sure.
Right, for sure. But there is never enough time or money or attention or wisdom. All of the things that parents need get halved. And if you're carrying a burden of grief, you know, grief kind of takes up a lot of bandwidth too. So all of the sudden, just the strength, the patience, the long suffering that you normally have as a parent, it gets shrunk down and it's all you. If you know, most single parents are going to be working at least one job. So that takes a lot of bandwidth. And all of those things just are an enormous energy drain, including the loneliness. That's an energy drain. And it's just a painful thing to bear. Now, it is true that we feel loneliness sometimes in marriage when mm-hmm. we're not connecting well with our spouse. I'm not diminishing that.
Yep.
But it is very definitely a different thing
yeah.
to know on Friday afternoon, mm-hmm. you've got this weekend ahead of you.
Yeah.
And it's just you and a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old all weekend long.
Yeah. Or
for divorced parents who are sharing custody, they might have to hand off that 4-year-old and their 2-year-old. And then that person is grappling with missing their children all weekend. And also maybe feeling a little guilty that they're looking forward to getting a chance to take a nap. I mean, there's all kinds of complex emotions that come around the loneliness that a single parent feels. Single parents feel very vulnerable. And in fact, they are. There's a chapter in the book that shares statistics of all of the things that the children are more vulnerable to: poverty, doing poorly in school. They're more vulnerable to predators, to sexual predators. They're more vulnerable to depression and anxiety. And we feel this as single parents. I remember shortly after my husband died, I had an opportunity to spend some time with a friend of mine who had been a single mom for 2 years. And the first thing she said to me, "You realize how vulnerable we are, right?" And I had just been experiencing that. And she put that word to it. And I knew what she felt. And you have much less capacity to protect your children when there's just one set of eyes. And even something as simple as the fact that you're going to have to let your child stay at school for 15 minutes longer after basketball practice because you're coming late for work, or, you know, you've got to pick up another child first. That child is sitting at the school waiting for you an extra 15 minutes. That makes you feel vulnerable. Uncertainty, we need wisdom, and we don't have the other parent who loves that child as much as we do to bounce things off of, or we have a broken relationship with that other parent. And so we need God's wisdom just all day, every day, because we don't have the sounding board. And then there's shame, which can come sometimes from the circumstances surrounding our singleness, sometimes from the simple fact that we feel like we're not enough, because we are not enough in and of ourselves. And that's why my working title for the book was "The Sufficiency of God for the Single Parent Family." Now, that's kind of a clunky, old-fashioned maybe sounding title,
sure.
But that's God's grace is enough. And that is what the single parent has to learn, because we feel so insufficient in every area all the time. And our singleness only ramps that up.
Yeah. That's, Brings me to this next, and I don't mean this to harp on any churches, because you're part of a church. I'm a pastor of a church, so we're not saying this to critique the church, but just to point out some stuff from churches, because churches, whether intentional or not, can feel unwelcoming to single parent families, because they tend to be family focused, which is fantastic. Like, you should love families, but when it's so focused to the unintentional or intentional exclusion of those who are not the quote unquote traditional families, it can feel frustrating and, I'm assuming, unwelcoming. So what are examples of churches that churches can be aware of and be more intentionally welcoming versus unintentionally unwelcoming?
Yeah, this is so important for the future of the church in America, because depending on what study you look at, between 25 and 30% of the families in the United States are being led by one parent.
That's a lot higher than I think people think.
It is. And that represents over 19 million kiddos.
Yeah.
So we really need to be having this conversation. And that's why I'm so grateful to you for having me on. There is a book called The Great De-Churching.
Yep. We had them on last year. Yep.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, great. So the second most common reason that people leave the church has to do with a major shift in family structure. And it is in part because single parents often don't feel like they fit in churches anymore. One of the things that I noticed as I was thinking about this book was that I knew a whole lot more single parent families at school than I knew at church. So they're there.
Yeah.
They're often just not wanting to come to church. So your question, the church really operates as if every family has two parents. Yep. And that is God's design. That is God's design. And that's ideal.
Not saying they shouldn't be welcoming to families. It's just that tends to be their focus.
Yes. And but there is almost an idea that a single parent family isn't a family. For example, from the pulpit, one time I heard, and it was not the pastor, said, we're having the family retreat in 2 weeks, and we are so excited because 37 couples have signed up. And immediately the implication to me sitting in the pew is, oh, your family's not a family because it's not led by a couple. And I started thinking, where am I going to fit in this retreat?
Yeah.
Are all of the workshops for parents going to be about marriage? Yeah. You know, who am I going to sit with? You know,
you're not being intentionally exclusive. It's just, that's the wording that makes you feel unwelcome.
Right. And things, little things like sermon illustrations.
Yep.
Occasionally. Sorry.
No, I need this for sure. I need this. This is something I always think about.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you for thinking about it, because we do need to hear about our families, and our kids need to hear about their families.
Yeah.
From the pulpit, as a family that God loves and God is moving and working in their family, and they're not somehow less than because what has happened to their family. Kids really, really need to see this. The most hurtful thing that someone in a church might do, and it could be anyone, again, unintentional, is approaching that family with a kind of a question mark over their head, wondering, how did your family get to be single parented? There is a man, a pastor that I quote in the book, and Eric Tonjes is his name, and he was widowed with three small children. And he says that he began to feel what he called the single parent self-justification shuffle, meaning that if someone in a Christian context saw him with his children, wife not there, he could almost see the little bubble forming, cartoon bubble forming over their head. Where's the mom? Where's the wife? And almost as if they are trying to determine whether or not his family is one that deserves their care and pity.
Mm-hmm.
Did their family, was it formed in this way for, quote, biblical reasons?
Yep.
And that's
yep.
being harsh.
Yeah, is there a sin we have to get past in order to start talking to you?
Thank you. Yes. And I, yes, exactly. And my answer is it does not matter.
Yeah.
We don't approach a new single guy coming to church wondering what his sins are before we can welcome him to our church. We don't approach a new married couple with three kiddos. Yeah. What are their sins that might prevent me from? No, that's not what church is for. Everybody in the pew is a sinner saved by grace.
Mm-hmm.
And so also single parents and their kids are not projects.
Mm-hmm.
They're not an excuse to, or a way to check the care for the widows and orphans mandate.
Okay. Yep.
I heard this over and over from single parents that they just want to be welcomed. Yeah. And like anybody else, like any other mom and daughter, or, you know, father and son, they just want to be welcomed and acknowledged to just be people who love Jesus. You don't need to know their story before you welcome them. And they're not opportunities for ministry. They're just people to befriend.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's a horrible example, but it's like an all-white church having the token black family in there, and that's the reason why you have them. It's like, oh, this is the black family you have. It's somewhat akin. It's like, oh, we have a single parent family here, and why don't you go talk to them?
yeah, and nobody wants to be in that position. It's yeah. not. It's inherently not welcoming, and inherently makes you want to leave.
It's a hide and leave. Yeah.
It's not that we need the church to develop a bunch of programs. Programs can be great.
Sure.
But, and it's not that we only need to have material needs provided for. Now, sometimes that's crucially.
100%.
But we need relationships.
Yep. Yep.
We need friendships just like you do.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So throughout the book, and I think there's a few specific chapters where you dive into some biblical narratives, whether they be Psalms or actual biblical narratives that describe God's heart, because this is God's grace for every family. So you describe that specifically within redemptive history, specifically for single parent families, whether they be a narrative about single parent family or about something else. So what are some of these biblical passages that you point to in the book, and how do they speak to those who are struggling through these issues?
Well, the number one go-to for single parents is the story of Hagar
yep.
in Genesis. And you know what? I would say that this is a great story for any human being on the planet. We
yep.
all know something of what it feels like to be Hagar.
Yep.
But it's also the go-to story for those who want to know how God feels
mm-hmm.
about those who don't fit the mold. And Hagar doesn't fit the mold, right?
Nope.
So she is vulnerable. She is a woman in a culture that does not value women. She
yeah.
is a slave. She
yep.
is unmarried. She is a foreigner. She has no protection. The people who are supposed to protect her do an absolutely terrible job. They use her
yep.
in the worst way possible, and then they make it almost impossible for her to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So she's exposed in every way. She is pregnant. Like any mother, she loves that baby.
Mm-hmm.
But she's so desperate, she'd rather die than stay with Sarah and Abraham another way. another day. So she goes out into the wilderness, and God, of course, meets her there. And mm-hmm. she becomes the first person in scripture to name God. You are the God who sees me. Mm-hmm. And that's a word for any of us, but that is really a word for a single parent, because they feel unseen in their church communities. They feel unseen in the world. They even feel unseen in their homes, because there's no partner to see them there. And they're not supposed to be cared for by their children. It's neat, you know. So if we want to know how God feels about single parents, let's look at how kindly, gently, lovingly he cares for Hagar. Now, he does send her back. Mm-hmm. He has protection for her, and it is not going to be easy, mm-hmm. but he cares for her and provides for her. And then she gets kicked out the second time, mm-hmm. and he comes to her again and reassures her that he sees her. And even cooler, the second time, he tells her that he hears Ishmael.
Yep.
And the fact, the seeing and the hearing of the single parent, but the care for the child, mm-hmm. because always, like every parent, the way to a parent's heart is to love their child, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really true for single parents who cannot be everything they need for their children. So sorry to spend so much time on Hagar, but
yeah, that's as you realize what Abraham and Sarah did to get Hagar pregnant, because they were not trusting the promise of Yahweh in Genesis 15, and they go get her pregnant then, and then go cast her out. And then even what Ishmael's name, because it means God hears, which is a pretty fantastic thing. It's just striking, like you said, we're in that society. I mean, you just got to name it how it is. That's like, she is the lowest of the lowest of the lowest of the lowest of the lowest. That's like, you don't get lower than a slave woman who's with a child. It's bad. Mm-hmm. And so Abraham and Sarah cast her out. And so the only one to bring her back in is the least that you expect, the deity who you would think would cast her out, because now she's marked by sin and infidelity and all this stuff. But God is the one who hears her.
It's just so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And for the single parent who is struggling so hard mm-hmm. to care for the children, to know that they're seen and loved and protected.
Yep.
Wow. It's
everyone else, like you said, sees you because of your supposed sin or whatever it is happened, to know that God is looking at you, not, and then seeing your sin and then seeing you. And so how am I going to figure this out? He sees the one who's struggling, and not because you're a sinner, but not because of that. He sees you because he loves you.
Because he loves you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of your home run story. I also loved one story that meant a lot to me right after my husband died. It's the story of Joshua and the way in which the leadership that he had, you know, sort of shared with Moses. Definitely he was, you know, the number two guy in that situation. But, you know, Moses has struggled to lead these people. They are not easy. They are stiff-necked. And so the mantle that falls to Joshua after Moses dies is just enormous. And Moses has walked closely with God, and even so, he's had his struggles with leading them. And we know, starting in Deuteronomy, but way into Joshua, God repeatedly says to Joshua some form of, do not be afraid, be strong and courageous, I will be with you. Yeah. And we know he's doing that because Joshua is afraid. Mm-hmm. And he needs strength and he needs encouragement. And the source of that is the presence of God. And so that really meant a lot to me, because suddenly I was taking on the leadership of our family alone. Mm-hmm. And I needed to know that God was no less with me by myself than he was with my husband and I when we were parenting together.
Yeah.
And this story comforted me in that. Gosh, there's more. Another one that meant a lot to me was the story of Jehoshaphat, who, you know, was facing, as the king of Judah, was facing an army that was way stronger than the people of Judah were. And he calls them together to worship and seek the Lord together. And he says, "We do not know what to do, but our eyes are on you." And that's kind of the refrain prayer of the single parent in so many situations. There's not enough money to repair the roof. I do not know what to do, but my eyes are on you. My child keeps getting in trouble at school. I do not know what to do, but my eyes are on you. That prayer for the wisdom and guidance of God is a constant refrain for every parent. But, and you know, honestly, the single parent knows their needs so
it's a little more in your face.
It's in your face. And I do think we get to see the Lord move in power because we don't take our problems to our spouse quite so quickly. Mm-hmm. We take them to God. And sometimes a husband and wife can neglect prayer because they think they got it figured out and they only take the big things. And I say that as someone who was a married parent for 13 years. I'm not casting, you know,
yeah.
but it's easy to think, it's easy not to be quite as desperate when you're married, and single parents can feel desperate.
Yeah, we're not, yeah, like you said, you're not saying that two-parent families aren't desperate. There's just a degree of desperation that yes. single parents feel a little more. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about the church, how the church in general can be unintentionally unwelcoming. So let's maybe talk a little more about how they can be intentionally welcoming, like you said, without like focusing too much on it, to where the single parents like, oh, they're just focusing on me because I'm a single parent. They're creating all this stuff. And like I said, I just want to be a normal member of this church. So I want to focus more on the practical examples. You talk about this, but what are some specifics you recommend? And how was and is your family, how were they specifically helped, like you said, from your church? And how were others that you interviewed? And how can that be something that churches can implement, again, without putting too much undue pressure or too much undue focus on single parent families, that they're just like, I just want to be normal at this church?
Yeah. So some very practical things. This is not rocket science, so this is going to sound really simplistic.
Yeah.
But invite them over. Have them over. Mm-hmm. If you're having, you know, neighbors to watch the Super Bowl and grill out, just invite them over. Honestly, we got a whole lot fewer invitations because I think they thought it would feel awkward because there wasn't, you know, a husband anymore.
Yeah.
And so invite them over. Just have them hang out with your family. Befriend their kids. Be a safe adult, a trustworthy adult who can care for their kids. There were so many families in our church that reached out to me, but reached out to my children. For example, there was one fellow who, after my husband died, started taking one of my sons out to breakfast before yep. school
mm-hmm.
and did that. So my son was in third grade. He did that through junior high. And mm-hmm. then when my son got to high school, they switched to evenings and they had a meal a week for all those years. Mm. And still, when my son comes home from college, they still have a meal a week. He writes all three of my kids a note every Christmas and gets each one of them a gift that is designed for their own specific interests. You know, one of my sons really is handy, so he always buys him a tool, which is something that his own dad might have done. And sure. and this man shares that with my oldest son. They're both very handy. So he always buys them like a, I don't know, a drill or which, so just these simple act, all these years later, my husband's been gone over 13 years and yet my son still gets a Christmas present, but it's a long-term commitment. It's a commitment that says, I see you. I know what you like. I enjoy spending time with you. I want to develop your gifts the same way an uncle might, for example. And show up and just commit to be with those kids for the long haul. Another dad said to me, had us to his lake house and we're sitting around at lunch. And he says, your son is about to be a senior. What can I do for you, for your son, for the next year? So he already knew my son because there we were at his lake house, you know, and he thought she's going to have a year of heightened need. What can I do? What he ended up doing was I said, we need help finding a summer job because everything I suggest, my son doesn't want to hear it.
Yep.
So he talked to him about it. And my son received that from a man differently than he would, you know, he thought his mom didn't know anything. He ended up working construction.
Yeah.
It was great. It was great. You know, sometimes they just need another adult that's not mom or dad. It's not because he didn't love me. It's not because he didn't respect me. You just need more than one adult. And so come close and be those adults for that family. Know what the needs are. If the needs are financial, don't just give them money. How can you preserve that family's dignity? Even as you meet the needs. And I can't answer that for every circumstance because you have to get to know that family. You have to know them well enough to know what the needs are. For example, I shared a story in the book. There was a woman, single mom, who had two children and a neighbor of hers who did not go to her church, but was, you know, a loving Christian believer. Her neighbor got to talking to her in the yard one day and discovered that she didn't do any of the women's things at church.
Yeah.
And he called their church because he knew them the next day and talked to the women's director. And the women's director was so surprised because they had money to support with a babysitter. But this mom didn't know that because no one knew her very well. No one knew what the needs might be. So she would come in and sit in the pews and her kids would go to Sunday school and then she would get up and leave and that was it for church every week. But there was so much more that the church could, now you don't know, so much more the church could have been doing. We don't know if that single mom was simply ashamed, didn't know how to ask for help, but as those in the church, we can get to know them and begin to discover what the challenges are and see how we can meet them. I spoke to a single dad who wanted to join a small group and the small group he wanted to join decided to change the time that they met and open it up so that kids could come too. So that he could come to small group on Wednesdays when he had his children and didn't need to feel like he had to get a babysitter when he only had halftime custody of his children. And the whole small group adjusted their schedule so that this man could bring his kids. And in the process, the other adults in the small group got to know his kids a little bit and those relationships started happening. So all that only happened because they got to know him,
yeah,
and saw what the needs were and were willing to make adjustments so that family could feel like they were a part of things.
That's helpful. Because I think my guess is churches will, their first instinct is what program do we have to create to invite some of the single parent families, like you said, and it, like, as you read the book and as I'm sure people are listening to you, that I feel like it's just another thing that the church is doing that doesn't quite put the finger on the issue. It's because it, like you said, even in the book, you said that adds an extra burden to single parent families. Like, how do I get to this program? How do I do some of this stuff? Versus what you're saying, which is hard, but necessary. The members of the church coming around and figure out what needs can they fill versus adding another responsibility on top of the single parent family.
And the single parent programs can be wonderful. And yeah, we all know that it is really helpful, for example, when you have toddlers, to have some group of parents of toddlers that you can talk about what that's like. So it's not saying that a single mom's group or a single dad's group is a bad thing, but there absolutely have to be avenues for them to get involved in the life of the whole church. As a single mom, I really needed some men in our lives. And the church is the place for me to form those friendships. You're my brother. For me to form those friendships, because I was raising boys and I needed men to help, that I could ask questions. And, you know, men taught my children how to shave and tie a tie. And because I hated teaching them how to drive, they helped me. They couldn't do it all, but they certainly took them driving. Actually, a couple of women did that too. That, you know, there's just get to know them. What do they need? And how can you, and don't put them off in a corner, silo them. Okay, we got this, check. We got them over there.
Yeah. So I want to dive back into something we've already sort of talked about. And you talk about this more towards the end of this book. Let's say members of the church that are curious because they got a new single parent family walk in Sunday morning, and they're not quite sure how to approach them because they don't have many, if any, single parent families, or they do and they just don't know who they are. What questions are approaching the single parent family or the single parent are less helpful that they might think are helpful on the front end, and how might they be better approached? I think people think there's like a magic bullet, like, oh, how do I talk to them? So maybe talk to people who are like, I've done this before and it just didn't go well. And why didn't it go well? So how can I do it better?
Well, my answer here is going to be disappointingly simple. How would you welcome any new family that walked up to your church? Ask them this. It's always awkward. You know, you're always afraid you're going to ask the question, you know, no matter what, you're always afraid you're going to ask the question that means they'll never come back again.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, if mom's not there, obviously don't ask where's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody volunteers, you know, she's sick this Sunday, fine, whatever. But yeah. How would you speak to any new family?
Mm-hmm.
Even if both of the parents were there,
mm-hmm.
and then it's the same thing. You just get to know them. How did you find our church? We loved having you here. You know, are you new to the city? Mm-hmm. And let the conversation go from there. That's really simple. Just treat them like you would any new family in the church.
Yeah. And one thing I want to press into a little bit, just because I am sure I've done this, and you talk about this in the book, less helpful ways of a mom or dad of a two-parent family who's trying to connect with the single parents. Like, oh, like I'm a bachelor on the weekends. Like, I'm a single parent on the weekends. I kind of know what it feels like. So things that people think are like, I'm trying to connect with you, that maybe aren't as helpful as they think it is.
Well, you and I have talked about all of the things that people who are parents share in common.
Yeah.
Like weariness and not knowing how to raise your children. And what do you do about tantrums and all of those things? Connect with them on the needs that you know that they have. Mm. And yes, assuming that you know what they feel like because their spouse travels for work, And I would say almost every single parent that I interviewed brought that up.
Yeah. It was like the strongest worded paragraph in the book. And I was like, this is a big issue.
Yeah. You don't know what it's like to be divorced and have to deal with your ex-husband and his new wife. You don't know what it's like that, you know, that that man's wife is never coming home because she's gone to be with Jesus. You can't know what it's like to be a single parent unless you are one. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, as we've said, two-parent families don't have lots of struggles, but mm-hmm. connect with them on the struggles mm-hmm. that you know that you have in common. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say that's the number one. And then just don't forget that they are single parents and everything that they do is harder mm-hmm. than what you do. For example, if you've got a group that's planning, you know, a retreat weekend, turn to the single mom and say, what works for you? It can be that simple. Don't what works for you because, you know, you've got a custody arrangements and blah, 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 blah. Just what works for you. Mm-hmm. Just what, keep it simple. What works for you is a great question in a lot of circumstances because it acknowledges that things are more complicated for that single parent, but doesn't go into a lot of blah, blah, blah about why. You know, if you're talking about the cost of something and it's going to, you know, what are we going to charge for this? Well, what would work for you? You know, it's a way of open-ended asking, you know, without getting into all the reasons that you're asking.
Sure.
Does that help a little bit?
That does help. Yeah. I think our natural instinct is to, like you said, compare our situation with theirs positively and negatively. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I'm sure I've said this, and I'm sure people who are listening to this have said this. Like you said, well, like my wife has gone on the weekend, or my husband is gone during this, and like I kind of share your difficulties. I can help you out with this. Some of the, and after reading that, I was like, oh man, I'm 100% sure this has been said by anybody who's listening to this, which is helpful. Not to say like, hey, you screwed up, but it's hey, that maybe that's not the way. Like you said, sharing their struggles, not so much like, hey, I'm struggling with you in the same way that you're struggling, which, like you said, may not be helpful because it can point out some stuff. It's like, well, you really aren't, and they're really not sure how to just tell you. It's like, no, you're not. It feels mean.
The week after my kids went back to school after their dad died, one of my sons came home really angry, and his brothers and I asked him what was wrong, and he said, if one more person tells me they know how I feel because their cat died.
Yeah.
And that's a third grader version.
Yeah.
The sweet kids were trying to connect. But keep that in mind. It may feel like that to the single parent. Okay, so your cat died. And it okay, so your wife is gone for the weekend. Okay. For you.
Sure. Yep. So lastly, and we've already touched on this, but maybe putting a little bow on it, those churches who are seeking to love and thinking through these issues, who may not have approached this well, or like you talked about at the very beginning of this, were unintentionally unwelcoming, even though they want to be welcoming to all kinds of people, all kinds of different families, all kinds of walk of life. And want to serve those who come from families that don't fit kind of the traditional cultural norm of churches. How might we as a church, we talked about individuals, but how might the church extend God's grace in a way that's both spiritually nourishing and practically helpful?
Yeah, I think that in our preaching and teaching and in our individual relationships, we remember that every one of us is a sinner saved by grace.
Yep.
And we all need Jesus desperately.
Mm-hmm.
And I even don't like the term broken family because I feel like all families are mm-hmm. in a sense broken
mm-hmm.
by, even if the marriage is intact.
Yep.
By the sin and the world that we live in. So befriend humbly, teach humbly, be aware of your own need for God's grace. Teach that from the pulpit. We all need Jesus. Even those whose lives look like they're following the traditional Christian mold.
Mm-hmm.
Mom, dad, kid. We all have the same need for a savior. And I would say that single parent families actually are places where you can see God's grace very visibly moving. And so we have a lot to offer the church.
Mm-hmm.
We may not have a lot of time to volunteer. Yeah. We may not have a lot of money to contribute, whatever the thing, but we have seen God move, and we have a testimony, and we are on our knees in prayer a lot. And those are all good things. And those are things that the church needs. So that's what I'd say. That's what I'd say. Remember that single parent families are families. They are families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that the kids may feel even more self-conscious than the parents about the way their family looks different from the other parents. From the other families. It's very hard sometimes to sit in the pews surrounded by two parent families.
Yeah.
And the fact that single parent families are there, that's cause for joy and celebration. The fact that they're there
mm-hmm.
is, it was harder for them to get there than mm-hmm. it was for you. And yeah. It's harder. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it might be even harder to be there mm-hmm. than it was for you.
Yeah.
That's what I would keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, Anna, thank you so much for your ministry through Rooted, through your writing ministry and sharing, especially I think through the first part of the book, sharing deeply what it's like, even for those of us who might never know what that's like, a little bit of a lens into this, because you're raw in the book and it's really helpful to hear your experience, even if it's not my experience. It is my wife's experience when she was growing up. But yeah, it's a beautiful read, and you see God's grace through the page, and you see hurt, you see disappointment, but it is molded by God's grace. So thank you for writing this book, for coming on our show, for talking about this. I'm sure, like, I know we have single parent families who are single parents are listening. We have all sorts of different people. And thank you for talking to them who may feel somewhat hidden within Christian culture, and they just want to be part of it. It's not necessarily they want a voice. They just want to be part of it. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Of course. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this week's book club episode, where we spotlight a specific book from a publisher and an author that both Nick and I really enjoy. We don't always agree with everything that the author or the book comes about, but what they do share with us is love for Christ and his gospel, from whatever tradition they come from, whatever creedal tradition they come from or confessional tradition. We all do share the same broader ecumenical Christian faith, from different backgrounds, ethnicities, and denominations. We hope that these introduce books that you might not have heard of before, authors that you might not have heard of before. I've been really helped by learning about some of these. If you want to go to our show notes, find a link to the publisher, that helps them out a ton. A link to the author's page, to the book, to purchase it from the publisher themselves. It really helps them expose their work through the publisher themselves.
Yeah, and the value that we're bringing with these book clubs is you guys can really rely on us, because as we all know, it takes a lot of time and effort to stay on top of all the books that are coming out and know which ones are probably good to look into, be recommended to read, look out for. And so these episodes are to whet your palate. We have already know that we're going to recommend this book, but you can listen to the episode yourself, get a little more understanding of the book and the author, and then go from there.
Yeah. So if you want to find these books and purchase one for yourself, purchase one for friends or family. And also too, if you can find us on Apple, Spotify, any podcast catcher, rate and review us. That's how we're best known. It's how we kind of make ourselves known. Introduce these to a friend and maybe just build your bookcase, build your reading, read broader and read really well, all under the umbrella of our creedal faith under Jesus Christ.